So I was going to introduce us, but he didn't pray for us. We're the kiddos, and I had that in there too, so we'll start there. So will you pray with me? Great and glorious God, will you shine your light on all of us, helping our children and helping us to see you, to guide our hearts and our feet in the way of peace. Amen. So, it's good to be with all of you in spite of the weather. It's how many of you got to play outside? Yeah. How many of you didn't have to? How many of you did not have to shovel your driveway? And then how many of us did? Okay, we're here. I know a lot of us in this room are newer to the Anglican way. And so for some of us, learning, you know, what is an Anglican, learning about liturgy, learning different words that we may have heard as at different times in our life, but didn't really understand what it was. And today we're going to focus in on one of those words, and it's Epiphany. Now Michael's like, how much are you going to get into the meaning of Epiphany? And we're like, a lot, don't touch it. So before we get into what Epiphany means in the church, what does it just mean, period? What is an Epiphany? If you heard someone say, I just had an Epiphany. It's a realization. Do that again. Open eye. Miriam's like, this, yes. Sometimes it's signaled with a light bulb. So that is what an Epiphany is. Today we're going to talk about the most important realization in the history of the world, and that's of Jesus. But before we get too deep into it, Epiphany has always been really important in our house because it's also his birthday. It's Chris's birthday, yay! It's also, interestingly enough, Owen Fulgham's birthday, and it was one of those little things that was kind of like, huh, maybe we're supposed to be a part of this community.
Yes. That was an epiphany when we sat down with him and figured that out very early on. It's like, okay, what you doing here, God? All right, so let's focusing on what we're going to be talking about this morning. So a couple of years ago, InterVarsity published this whole series of books on the key Christian holy days, and Epiphany was one of them. And when I saw that, I thought, okay, it's finally time for me to figure out what those ladies meant when they said, oh, an epiphany child. What does that actually mean? It's more than just the wise men. But we were excited reading through this book, learn more than we possibly could tell you this morning, but we wanted to share some of what we came out of this learning, not just the facts, but how it impacts our view of God and our life. So we're going to focus on three central points today. What does Epiphany mean? Secondly, how is Jesus completely central to that meaning? And then finally, how this meaning affects our lives. So the word epiphany comes from the Greek, a Greek word that means manifesting or manifestation. And the day of Epiphany, of course, is more specific than that. But here's a definition that we're going to work from through the sermon. So if you're a note taker, write this down. I'll repeat it twice. Epiphany is the celebration of God manifesting his glory through Jesus to the whole world. Once again, Epiphany is the celebration of God manifesting his glory through Jesus to the whole world. That's a lot to take in one sentence. So we're going to take some time to break this down. First, Epiphany is a celebration. So when we talked about Advent a few weeks ago, it was kind of connected with Lent in that those are more reflective and somber celebrations. Epiphany is more like Christmas, where it is a joyous celebration or a feast. Not quite as known by the nation, the culture, as Christmas is. But what exactly are we celebrating? God manifesting. Now, that word has taken on a whole different sideways meaning in our culture. The word manifesting, Psychology Today defines it as the idea that through the power of belief, we can effectively think a goal into becoming reality. It's a form of magical thinking. The definition by Psychology Today actually said that. All right, sorry to break it to you, but the only one who can literally think something into concrete reality is the one who said, let there be light, the one who gave sight to the blind and rose from the dead. But there is some truth in that definition. When we celebrate this manifesting in Epiphany, it's definitely something huge that God thought into reality. My Bible reading plan in the Book of Common Prayer starts this year with the Gospel of John. And John 1:14 is the ideal passage for explaining what God manifested. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. So what did God manifest? He manifested the Son in the flesh, dwelling among us, Jesus of Nazareth. Now, there's another way we think of the word manifest sometimes, and it's in the sense of make manifest. So making something clear or obvious that was previously hidden or invisible. I might make manifest my frustration at the Bills football game by yelling at the TV set. Or I might make manifest my love for Claire by kissing her or giving her roses. So as we read in Ephesians 3, in the passage that Hannah read a few minutes ago, Paul writes this, "The mystery of Christ, which was not made known to people in other generations, has now been revealed by the Spirit." So what did God make manifest? What did he reveal that was hidden? He clearly revealed his amazing grace and truth through this in the flesh Jesus, his teachings, his death, his resurrection, really his whole life. But our definition of Epiphany that I said just a minute ago, it didn't actually say that we're celebrating God manifesting Jesus. We said it's God manifesting his glory. And the John 1 passage makes the connection between glory and Jesus. It says that in Jesus, we have seen God's glory, the glory of the one and only Son. Now, glory is one of those big Bible words all through the Bible. It's a lot of times all through our worship service as well. And maybe you can't hear the word glory without thinking of a Pentecostal preacher with his hand in the air saying, glory! That was the point I was talking about there. Needed to wake you up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But what does it really mean when we're saying it? Maybe we should know what we mean when we're saying it. The term is intertwined, I think it's helpfully, in a different Bible term, light. So think of glory as the intense, shining brightness of God as his majestic power and love emanate from him, like rays of the sun. Take a moment. We're going to practice this new definition of glory or helpful. Close your eyes. Imagine Jesus, however you imagine him in your prayers, surrounded by this intense brightness of his glory. Almost too much to take in. And yet, he's looking at you with eyes of grace and truth. Just let that sit for a minute. Paul assures us in Ephesians 3:12, through faith in him, we may approach God with freedom and confidence. So thank you, Leanne, for pointing us all to that verse. Epiphany teaches us that this is how God desires to relate to us, both his glorious majesty and his loving relationship with us at the same time. So now you can open your eyes, if you still have them closed. We understand a little bit better what it means for God to manifest his glory. The final phrase in the definition I gave was that the recipient of this is the world. And the significance of that is that it's not just Israel. So in some ways, Israel had even forgotten that it was supposed to be a light to the Gentiles. But God had foretold through the prophets that Israel would be a light to all the Gentiles, non-Jews, to the whole world. But how would they become that light, this little nation that kept getting exiled and defeated? As Paul points out, God's hidden plan was that it would be through the Son himself, coming in the flesh to everyone on earth. to offer forgiveness, and to offer a relationship, new life, to every person in the world. And that's where the wise men, the magi, come into the picture. What's so fascinating to me about these magi is that they were not Jews at all. They were probably Persians, probably pagans, and astrologers. And I think if you read Hannah's essay that she sent out earlier in the week, it's very helpful. I'm going to go through a couple of the points here. God used their own language, though, to attract them. He used the stars. He didn't give a theological explanation. It was probably not just one bright star parked over Bethlehem. It was probably a combination with the star that said to them, King of Jews being born. Whatever it was, though, it drew them hundreds of miles to what they knew as the capital of Judaism, Jerusalem, and to the current king, Herod. They didn't know anything about Micah's prophecy that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem. They would find that out. So, interestingly, they brought the exact gifts from Isaiah 60 that were going to come from that part of the world, gold and incense, two kinds of incense. I just found that fascinating. That was a discovery for me this week. And as Hannah pointed out in her blog, they probably didn't arrive at the actual birth because a couple of pieces of evidence of that. Herod asked them when they saw the star, and then he went out and tried to kill all babies 2 years old or younger. So it was probably at least a year after the birth, or at least after the star had appeared. But they did come to Bethlehem, and Jesus was still there. So that's fascinating that they were still living in Bethlehem at that time. So that's your history lesson. So the prophecy of Israel being a light to the Gentiles was first fulfilled in this most odd way. And those odd fulfillments would continue through Jesus' life. God manifested his glory in the flesh for 30 years. Real human beings could see God with their eyes. They could hear God with their ears. They could touch him like Thomas did, touching the scars. God didn't have to do this, but he did. A gift out of sheer compassion for our weaknesses as human beings.
So, great history lesson. What do we do with it? What do we do with this understanding? Go back to the definition again. Epiphany is a celebration of God manifesting his glory through Jesus to the whole world. What do we do with this gift of being able to see and hear and touch Jesus? That was great for the disciples. They actually got to be there and do it, but we don't. It's kind of hard to touch him nowadays. Or is it? First of all, we, like the Hebrews in Isaiah 60, are called to worship. We're called to also reflect Jesus. But how do we do that? For those of us who are followers of Christ, Epiphany calls us to lean into the truth of God's glory, that Jesus shows us his glory. Yes, in human form, but supernaturally too. In the Epiphany book that Chris was talking about, Fleming Rutledge makes the point that in recent times, we've gotten really caught up in a good way, to the fact that there is a lot of horrible things in the world, that there's been a lot of injustice and things done in the name of the church that were never meant to happen. And yet at the same time, what we've done is we've moved all the way over to focus on Jesus and his love as a teacher, as a moral example, but we've lost the majesty. We've lost, in some ways, this glory. We can laugh at that, but there's something very much real to it. I think that's caught up in the way we get caught up in magic. You know, we Michael shared, you know, use that image for us on Christmas Eve. We're attracted to that and we're curious about it. So how do we tap in to the fact that Jesus is God's Son, and at the same time, he's full of love. He's both majesty and mercy. He's glory and love. Yes, a great teacher, but so much more than that. How, in a practical way, can we tap into that? First of all, I would encourage you just to ask God. Ask him to show you. Show me your glory. Literally, ask him. And then watch for it. An easy way to do it around here, we are so fortunate to live in this place, in this area of the country. Look around you. Go out in nature. Look for God. His creation reveals who he is. Another way to do it is simply to read the book of John. Chris mentioned that he started that for this season. And the book of John, as opposed to the other gospels, shows Jesus doing the miracles more and more. It shows the divinity of who he is. As you do that, this is something that this church has really taught us how to do. Tap into that sanctified imagination. As you read the miracles, what does it look like? Imagine it. What would it have been like to be there? And lastly, listen to music. I know that for a lot of you, music is key. And I know it leads me into worship as well. Let the music that stirs your soul open you up to the majesty of God. All right, so that's one part. Don't lose the majesty of Jesus. But the second part is this. Epiphany invites us to reflect this glory of Jesus in our character and in how we treat others. It's not news that there's an incredible amount of discouragement and fear in the world today. Reading that line in Isaiah 60, see, darkness covers the earth. Thick darkness is over the people. What they need and what we need is hope. And Jesus offers that. The rest of that verse, but Jesus rises upon you and his glory appears over you. Nations will come to your light and kings to the brightness of your dawn. In Isaiah, this was addressed to the Jews, but today it applies to all of us. Remember what Chris taught a minute ago? He said, God clearly revealed his amazing grace and truth through the life, teachings, death, and resurrection of Jesus. We can read about this in God's word. We can gather to hear a sermon or listen to a podcast or read a blog. But what about folks who really aren't interested? They'd never shadow the door here. They're not going to read the Bible. How are they going to learn? It's going to be through us reflecting the love and the compassion of Jesus. Remember, Helene, that was reflecting. The church gathering together, loving others, that was reflecting the love of God. And you might say, okay, that was great. That was a season. We did that then. But how do I do it today? Well, like Paul in his letter to the Ephesians, if you read on in that passage, he says that when we choose to serve God, he will give us opportunities to shine, pointing the way to Christ. What about you? Is there a neighbor who might be hurting? Is there a coworker who's struggling? I would encourage you just to listen. Ask them how they're doing. Possibly pray for them. Maybe just take a meal. Sometimes shining the light of Christ is simply in a greeting. In 2012, our family was on vacation here in Waynesville. We had not moved here yet, and we came to Vine. Y'all were down in Depot Street, and that night, I wrote about my visit. I said, you know, the people there were really nice. They were so kind, and they were so welcoming. It was just an amazing community. I was so impressed. One lady really took a lot of time to meet me, and I could just tell Jesus shined off of her. She told me about she and her husband, they were going to try to buy some property and build a small farm. Her name was Amy. For those of you who don't know Amy, she's right over there. Get to know her. You'll see what I'm talking about. All she did was she welcomed me. I remembered that. And it gave us a perspective of Vine as a warm and welcoming place out of one visit. So, we're called to embrace the awe. We're called to display the light. But you know, honestly, what if right now you're just not in a place to do that? What if right now you're like, yeah, that's great. I'm not even sure about Christianity. What does this mean for me? That's okay. We're so glad you're here. And I have to tell you, there are times when I too am not in a place where I want to reflect Or if what I do reflect, it's certainly not Jesus. Kind of like being a grimy mirror. There's something going on inside. If that's you right now, I would encourage you to take some time. Ask God, what's going on inside of me? Why am I struggling so? Take some time, talk to some of our pastors. Say, help me process this. If you have a good friend who walks with Jesus, ask them, what is this light she was talking about? I promise you, if you ask with a sincere heart, he'll help you find answers. Lastly, Epiphany points us to the truth that we can approach this amazing God, as Leanne picked up on, with confidence and with freedom. God sent his Son to manifest all that he is, both his majesty and his mercy, his glory and his love. And here's even more good news. He has a plan for the healing of this entire world. And it's not just for the world, but it's for each of us individually.